Good evening. You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Kelvin Yee. In the studios with me is Ian McNally and Julian Yap. We're talking about HBO and Sky News' new miniseries.
1,000 years of sacrifice in our veins. And every generation must know its own suffering.
To hell with our lives. Someone has to start telling the truth.
When this is over, will they be looked after?
It must be done. If you don't, millions will die. If you tell me that's not enough, I won't believe you.
It's Chernobyl, and it's coming out on HBO on May 7th. It's a 5-part miniseries that dramatizes the events in 1986. And the three of us got a chance to preview the first 3 episodes. Let's start with perhaps what our overall thoughts are.
It's basically unrelenting horror, the series, right?
I mean, definitely. It's not for the lighthearted. It's not your Monday night watch, let's just say that.
Yeah. It's not a night watch at all. No. Even from the first episode, it was very... I like to say very laborious. You had to focus a lot. You can't have this playing in the background.
Definitely not.
Like, I thought they were going to TV it up a bit, but this is very much a HBO prestige series. And before we kind of get into the show, I was wondering, what were your guys' kind of memories or your knowledge of Chernobyl as just like the atomic boogeyman or something that people told you about when you were growing up?
I think for me, it was just something that you kind of lightly touched on in history classes where, it was one of the, or if not the worst nuclear disaster we had ever faced. And that was just kind of my entry point into it. And with this show, I think they were trying to add the other more human elements to it, the issues of scandals and corruption.
Mm.
For me, Chernobyl, it's one of the big bads that happened, the biggest man-made natural disaster ever.
Yeah.
I'd heard of it. Once in a while, you'll see a Facebook post that pops up that this is what Chernobyl looks like now. Mm. And that's probably the only thing I had.
And you're going to be seeing that for the next 50,000 years.
Oh, for sure. And actually, I was watching the trailer for this. I was so excited for it. This is my favorite kind of show to watch, my favorite kind of film as well. I don't like to learn through, documentaries. I don't like to, I absorb nothing from just reading the Wikipedia. Yeah. Reading the Wikipedia for Chernobyl is ridiculous. You don't even know what's going on. You need some kind of degree. So watching some kind of fictionalized, dramatized version of it, not fictionalized, but it's probably the best way for me to learn, and I have learned in just these 3 episodes.
Yeah, because I think over time, these things would crop up. At the time, I remember seeing BBC News and the footage of that cooling tower, that very skinny tower with the wires down the side. It's like it's burned in your brain, and the big chunky Russian helicopter flying over, all these visuals, because it's all leaked out over time. That's all you see. You only see it on BBC, and you couldn't look up things on the internet. And in the intervening years, I have looked up things on the internet, because you hear things like a meltdown, and like, what is a meltdown? Or, the control rods, graphite, all this kind of stuff.
The core has exploded. Oh, yeah. No.
Just eject the warp core, just like they do in Star Trek, right? Shouldn't be a problem. So that leads you down rabbit holes of, like, how does a nuclear reactor work? And, like, it's all about the uranium heats up stuff, and that heats the water, and the water generates steam, and that turns turbines. So that's okay. That's to get electricity out of it. How do you control it? It's these carbon rods that go in and out. And how do you get a meltdown is when the carbon rods don't go in and out.
Yeah.
And this show seems to jump off that footage. There's actually a few parts. I found it confusing. We did get access to screeners, and like, it is all in English, and they didn't go they went the Hunt for Red October route without zooming into somebody's ear. You actually get everyone just speaking in their normal accents, which does, like, no one's trying to do Russian.
No,
which is great.
Which is great, but also you get some like real like English countryside accents in there, or like very regional.
They're not doing the English RP.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a, ooh, you're maybe Russian.
Yeah, is there like a general who's like Scottish or York? He's from Scotland. Or he's got that a country's accent, a county's accent.
Just toss that coin.
Yeah. So I like that element of it, but it's still, there's a moment with Russian text on the screen, and it's the phone call that's going out to the fire brigade.
Yes.
And I was looking for, it's based on a true fact, it's a true story, there's not really any spoilers. There's a helicopter crash. And I was like, did that really happen? Like, vaguely remember something about that. And if you Google that footage, you find yourself in a rabbit hole of footage from the time. most, a lot of which they use in the show. So that kind of Russian text with the subtitles of the Russians talking back and forth about there's a fire at the station, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That, apparently that's just the way they display things in court cases, the phone calls, like when you call the 911 operator in Russia. So all the news reports you see, those are actual news reports of the day.
Okay, that's cool.
So it really feels grounded. And there's something about the way it's shot as well. Feels like that it's not VHS quality video, but it has that graininess and grayness to it that is just like, hey, this is Russia in the 80s.
So I think my overall feel was that each episode was more or less defined by a certain theme or a certain emotion. In the first one, it felt as if they were trying to make you empathize with the situation. So they're showing you the different stakeholders that's involved, the administration staff, hospital staff, the wife of a fireman. And then come the second episode, you have the theme of trying to contain the situation before it really explodes. And I think that's how they timed the sequence of events that happened throughout the first two as well.
Well, it felt kind of weird to me because the ads kind of promoted this as Jared Hess and Stellan Skarsgård being like, you know, a big part of it. And they're barely in the first episode at all. There's kind of a bookending thing there. And I think the second episode is where you see them come in as a nuclear physicist and a hardcore
Emily Watson as well.
Stupid burkout. And then Emily Watson comes in near the end, middle of that episode, right?
Start of episode two.
Episode two, yeah. So when those characters start to come in, that's when it starts to, you get an idea of what the story is. Because it's Chernobyl, it's nuclear radiation. Basically, any character, any point of view characters, it's like Game of Thrones. Any point of view characters you introduce in that first episode will not be around for very long because some of them are literally staring into the nuclear furnace.
Yeah.
The verisimilitude of what they've done is like, it's terrifying. There's that guy who picks up the graphite block. He doesn't know what it is. And like, that's the thing that is like just infested with radiation. And it's got like enough to kill. It's like his hand is burned within seconds. It's not burning. It's like it's burning from the inside.
From, I think, the first 10 or 15 minutes, you see, you know, the actual engineers in the nuclear facility. They're trying to figure out what's gone wrong.
The Confederacy of Dunces.
Yeah, they're in denial. They're in complete denial. They don't know because this has never happened before. And
there's that repeated refrain of, oh, no, that's impossible. Just go check on the turbines. Like, they're not there.
There's nothing there. And there's a bit where they just look into Sauron's eye.
Yeah.
They just look into the sun. And it's just terrifying because you know, their faces are going to melt.
They're dead.
That's it.
And it really brings home that horror of it. Like, you just see person after person, they're told to go do something and they come back and they're tanned already. And then the rest of the symptoms
They're not
hit.
Tanned, they're burned.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the firemen are burned, but like the other people who are just like, okay, the engineer guys, they send out to look at stuff. They're like instantly, even when they don't even get close to it, they've got a tan already. And then it just gets worse from there.
That was the thing with this show, just watching it, even though, you know, you're seeing something happen, there's nothing holding out. You know, maybe there's that hope at the end of it. You know, maybe they're going to survive. Maybe they're going to be able to contain it well enough that no one dies from this, because history is that spoiler that you know that all of you, the characters are aware as well. They say, well, we're going to be dead within 5 years.
Yeah.
Or they're going to
Jared Hess's character. Yeah.
You're going to be dead in 2 days. And you're watching, you know, fictionalized, dramatized versions of these people, but these people very much are dead.
The thing I noticed about this was also how they portrayed fear and horror. It wasn't a complete slam in your face, but it was rather a build-up, or it was slowly, it was a slower burn when they tried to show how horrible things could get. I think the scene in the first episode where, I think that was the end perhaps, where the children are just playing around with the ashes.
Yes.
And adults are looking happily, longingly. The scene is very poignant. You're looking at a power plant burning, essentially, right?
That ash falling down, people dancing like it's just snow.
There's a line that one of the locals says, like, oh, we're going to go up to the bridge so we can see the fire. It's like, you're going to go see the fire? Yeah, but it's all the way over there. We're fine here.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not flashy with that. It's not like violins play to say, like, oh, all these people are going to get so sick. It's a hard watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And also with the music, it's just tense, tense, and tense. So there's this really mundane scene involving the firemen and trying to put a fire out. And there's just this droning music that makes them, despite it's just a simple scene of them going up a set of ladders and a set of stairs, the music just drones and drones and drones. And you know, well, this is bad news for them.
They don't do the Geiger counter sound all the time, but when someone's getting close to the reactor core and like that, there is these kind of noises that they play that kind of symbolize, like this is kind of repeating noises that are like, you're getting radiation.
It is terrifying that that Geiger counter just ticking up and up and up and building that climax. They use it so effectively just because they don't use it at all until they absolutely have to. And the score, it's minimal, but it's just... I think it's just cellos, and it's just, it sets the mood incredibly well.
So today we are talking about HBO and Sky News' new miniseries, Chernobyl. If you have any thoughts, you can send them to us on all our social media accounts. We are at SkipIntroMY. More after this, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's Skip Intro. I'm Kelvin Yee, and I'm joined by Ian McNally and Julian Yap. So we've been talking about Chernobyl. It's HBO's new five-part miniseries that dramatizes the events in 1986. And earlier, I guess we were just giving our reviews of the first three episodes that we were able to catch up on. And it was just overall very grim. And I don't think we can necessarily classify this as a sort of entertainment. But there is, of course, the fact that programs like this are generally just very important to have.
Mm. I talked about before in the first, earlier about how even I'd looked into bits and pieces on, and they were, the USSR was very secretive about the whole thing and you didn't know what exactly had gone on. I think in the later series, later episodes, we're going to get to the biorobots and the liquidators, who are the people who have to get the graphite back in the core, which is going to be more misery. But I'd heard about that kind of thing. Things about in the show where they talk about the fact, like Gorbachev says to them at one point, you've made lava.
In disbelief.
In complete
disbelief. He doesn't understand how they've done this.
You've actually made lava and it's going to float down into the, it's going to melt down into the water system and it's going to poison 50 million people for, and it's going to make an area 200 kilometers wide, uninhabitable for the next 5,000 years. That's a level of the danger to the story I didn't even know about. And I think that's why this show is kind of important. I mean, you hear people all the time talking about nuclear power being safe. And I think it's always about like, yeah, this is the worst possible thing that could happen. But if this can happen and the impacts can be so large, I think it's important that there is shows reminding people of that. Not to be, you know, all hippie and let's all live in the trees, but there has to be a balance. It's not just like, oh, nuclear power, it's perfectly safe. Nothing's perfectly safe. And you have to balance up what the actual risk is when things go bad.
I don't think that's exactly what they wanted to do when they set out to do the show. You know, I don't think they were trying to educate anyone. I think it was very much taking a very honest look, trying to cast this light on a thing that not a lot of people would have known about, making it accessible to people, trying to understand the human effect, making it a very accessible thing. You have, you know, these world leaders who, they don't know what's going on. Mm. And you have like a scientist who explains it in very simple terms. This is for the audience as well, obviously. You know, so grounding this big event into something that you could maybe just keep in mind for when you move to your nuclear city.
Yeah, because it's something that they actually do in the show as well, where they're talking about flying over the core so we can have a better look. This is the politicians can't understand something they can't see. It's just a fire. It's like, it's not just a fire. That's not just smoke. That's ionizing radiation. The radiation is so bad in there, it's turning the air blue. Yeah.
And that fly into that fire. Yeah. If you don't, I'll have you shot.
Yeah, and it's like, you'll want the bullet.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of a side effect of that first episode where this is such an impossible thing to happen that everyone's reaction to it is like the reversed Occam's razor. And in this case, they just have no clue how bad it is. And they were like, no, Soviet... Russian reactors don't explode. This is like, this. They don't explode. Obviously not.
Watching them learn in real time with us as well is probably the most effective part. They're leading this country, but they don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah. And I think with this one, you're also seeing it from a rather human perspective where you look at the different actors, you know who you can point to where, okay, this is a person to trust. This is a person who, I'm generally talking about the scientists, but you also have groups of people where, oh, why didn't they do anything sooner? And why do they continue to deny a disaster that is taking place literally in their backyard? And that points out to people that you could love and people you could hate on. Yeah. And I not necessarily fair, because this is a dramatization of an event, but I'm hoping that perhaps this sticks closer to the truth than it is than to fiction.
I mean, there's an interesting thing with the KGB isn't named so far, but they are in it. And, well, they are named, so the minister is named, who's in charge of it, who denies any knowledge of anything, but he he calls it a circle of responsibility. It's like we are just authenticating whatever, verification of everything. It's an interesting setup that they had with all these committees, and everyone's like, you know, the committee has said this, and so that's what you do. There's nothing. Everyone does. Another director has a point about the, I'm a shoe factory guy who's now in control, but I'm in control, and you scientists just turn up and fearmonger, as opposed to, oh dear God, everything's on fire, please let us help. And it's just, it's an interesting, it's a history lesson as well, just to see how bureaucracy can get out of control. And how some you have to keep your mind open to stuff.
And you're going to reflect it to what's going on. I mean, you know, you have people like Nancy Pelosi, who's not exactly qualified for the job that she has. Mm.
And the other lesson to take away is also the fact that in reflection of recent events is that we don't listen to our scientists enough. And that's come off in this show. And then it's coming up in how we think about global warming these days. So looking at a show like this, perhaps the point is also for us to be able to relate events from the past to events today, because it's a disaster of a different sort when we think about climate change.
Yeah, it's on a similar scale, but it's still the thing of like, it's like the Martian, smart people doing clever things. You know, that's what you want to get to, but you know, people have vested interests in protecting their position in the hierarchy and doing other things like, you know, keeping like that.
So given that we've only had the opportunity to watch the first three, and I believe there will be another two more episodes before this concludes, will you guys be watching the rest of it?
You talked earlier about the different episodes having different themes, and I think there's an interesting theme introduced in the third episode, which is that it starts off saying this kind of explosion cannot happen in these type of reactors. But there's an interesting theme of they did everything they were supposed to, and we need to find out what happened no matter who it points to. Like they start talking about a little bit more of who's responsible. Because the moment this stuff happens in the first episode as well, like when the party officials turn up, they've already presented, here's a list of who to blame.
Yeah.
Like they straight away have a list of who to blame. Even, and those guys are probably, those guys are dying of radiation poisoning. And that's not the first concern, is like not fixing the problem. Who can we pin this on?
And then we get to episode three when we actually get to hear from them.
Yeah. And it's like, we did nothing wrong. Like, but we thought they did nothing wrong, but they have nothing to fear on their deathbeds apart from, you know, salvation. So they're like, we're going to...
They did their job.
We did what we did. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I also know from history, though, the miners are doing a great job. These miners turn up and there's a kind of a funny sight gag that we'll see how that goes on TV here. But there is going to be a lot of people drafted. I think we see starting people drafted. They show scenes of people being conscripted, but you don't really see, you're not explaining what's happening there.
They have said the numbers, though. So yeah. The scale of it, you know what might be in store. And, you know, history tells you the number of people who were involved in this so that, you know, it sets it up enough of a precedent. But like, you know, I'm excited. I want to know how it plays out. It's that morbid curiosity. This was entertaining for me to watch. It was terrifying and was very harrowing. It was difficult, but I was enthralled the entire way through. Mm. Just even two episodes doesn't seem enough to round this whole thing up. But yeah.
For me, the first episode was still a very heavy watch, and because there weren't any central characters, so it was a bit hard to relate, despite the crazy events that were surrounding whatever that was happening, right? And it really did pick up towards the end. And it was actually the second episode that made me want to keep watching, because then you started having more important, you had more protagonists introduced to the story. But also the fact that I think that the first episode was really just a huge exposition of what was going on.
Yeah.
And then the second episode was, there was more direction in the second episode.
It's basically once Stellan Skarsgård and his amazing hairpiece turns up, you can't keep your eyes off that. I don't think I've ever seen him with that much hair. I've been following his career for a while.
Keeping in mind that the last thing I watched him in was Mamma Mia 2. This is fun.
Yeah.
We've been talking about Chernobyl today. It's coming out on HBO on May 7th. You can let us know your thoughts. We are at SkipIntroMY on all our social media accounts. You can also drop us a message at movies@bfm.my. You've been listening to Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.